You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Sleep in Society. I am your host, Ruhi Snyder. And today on Sleep in Society, I am delighted to be joined by my dear friend Christine Henk. Our topic of conversation is empowerment as part of the Motherhood, Womanhood and Empowerment series. Empowerment is a complex concept, for it is deeply rooted and includes but not limited to physical, mental, social, cultural and economic well-being. So how does one come to that place of power from within? To push through the fear, the discomfort, and take over agency of one's path in one's life. Especially as women, for most of human history, women have held secondary status in our society. Christine and I have been working together now for 15 years in the field of sleep medicine, and we've had many discussions around the subject of being mothers and around the subject of being women. And for the past few months, we have dived deep into our own personal journeys towards empowerment. Welcome, Christine, and I can't wait to get this conversation started.
Hey, me too. How are you doing today, Ruhi?
I am well. How are you?
Good, good.
Do you feel fully empowered right now, by the way?
I feel empowered. I don't think fully is... I don't think you can be fully empowered at any one moment. Because I think it's more of a fluid concept where it's there for the most part. And then sometimes you take a step back. As with anything that's a positive feeling in your life, I think if there's the positivity is there constantly, it's not true. Do you understand? Like, I feel empowered, but I feel like there's always more to come.
Yeah, it's a continuous process.
Right.
There are like levels of empowerment. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's just you're empowered and you're feeling and you're going along great. And then you kind of can get taken down a notch if something doesn't go your way. But it's always, yes, it's always fluid. You're always something that you have to work on constantly. It's not like one day I got a certificate of empowerment and now I'm empowered and that's that. Yeah. It's just something that's constantly...
Yeah, it's not developing
and improving upon.
Mm-hmm. It's not a wand, not a magic right. wand that no. suddenly you're given. I think it's a realization that comes with the idea of self-awareness, and that kind of realization where you kind of decide where you're at with things, what you like and what you don't like, and whether or not you have the ability or the power to be able to make choices regarding what you like and what you don't like,
right.
and then be able to perform an action based upon those things. So we, in our conversation, were talking about that in terms of when that moment came to where you were like, oh, no, I am empowered. I feel empowered. Can we talk about that in terms of where you were when that happened with you? Like, what do you recall where suddenly there was? Because I think there is suddenly a click, right?
There is a click. And mm-hmm. when we had this conversation the other day, I said there was a click and then there was another click and then there was another one. And I was like, oh, wait, I'm empowered just yet. I thought I was, but maybe I am now. But I think it came after a lot of disappointment and misguided notions that my happiness and my living the way that I should be living was coming from satisfying traditional female role expectations in my life as a mother and as a wife. And I mentioned that I met my spouse when I was quite young. I didn't really know what I wanted at that point. So I kind of fell into it. I fell into this relationship that was what I thought I wanted. And then as time went on and I grew and found that there were parts of my life that were kind of, there was a piece missing here and there, and I wanted to add to it, but the role that I was in didn't allow me to add to it. Realizing that that role had to be sacrificed, unfortunately, is the best word that I could think to
describe
that.
Not a compromise. It's a sacrifice.
It had to be a sacrifice because the relationship that I was in didn't allow for a compromise for me to bring in the things that I needed for myself personally. And I know that that sounds very, very selfish because I was a wife and a mother at the time. But that, I think, was like the really big turning point for me, is that I realized I'm not going to get this if I stay in this relationship. And I'm not saying anything bad about this person. It just, we grew apart. I was growing in one way and wanted certain things that would make me feel empowered as a woman, as a wife, as a mother, as a contributor to society and a good employee. That wasn't being nurtured in that relationship. So I think my major turning point was realizing that, unfortunately, my marriage was not going to continue, and that empowered me to make that decision that my happiness really was important. So that was the big one. But then it's been a few years of going through that, that loss and working through that and realizing that there are still a lot of steps till you actually are able to find what's going to make you happy and realize that you're doing it on your own now. Like, I was doing it on my own, which was, I think, was a really scary thing, and why I didn't reach that point earlier. But after that happened and I saw that, oh my goodness, I'm capable of taking care of these responsibilities that I've had the whole time, but also adding to my life and my happiness. That was it's an ongoing thing. And yeah. So when do you have a similar
experience?
Thought of how that happened for you, or how did that happen for you?
The idea of empowerment.
Yes.
I think, I wrote an essay on my 40th birthday to myself, not a letter, an actual, in terms of empowerment and women. Like, I am coming from India. I am the diaspora. I am a female, as are you, I'm a female.
yes, let's clarify, both women speaking
both
here.
Women. I'm a woman of color. And so there are all these components and layers added to that. And I was kind of on my own for a very long time and had to navigate and figure out ways when I didn't have support that people normally have, of family or other people around them. So navigating through those, I think empowerment was something that was slowly building in the background, because every time there was an obstacle, I had to kind of figure out a way around it. And every time, I think you kind of climb a hill, it's like you add something to yourself. You add something in terms of your consciousness, and you become more and more aware. But I remember when I started my case study is when I became aware of more of the structural and the systemic obstacles to empowerment. And also, I think that idea also became full realization of it once I really started incorporating and started doing like physical training, because I realized how much impact the physical training actually has on my mental aspects and how empowering the physical training itself was. And that was a wonderful moment of realization. And then, as we've discussed, that there are layers upon layers upon layers of this, that mm-hmm. you start with one thing. It's like, you know, you're climbing a mountain and mm-hmm. there is no particular, I don't think there's a summit to it, because I think each time that you're going to come up with your next challenge. So even in looking at in terms of case study is that you start looking at the challenges that you're presenting to yourself. You yourself as a challenge, I think, is one of the most interesting insights that I have to go in terms of empowerment.
So you feel like challenging yourself shows that you're empowered, or allows you to reach a new level of empowerment?
I think
each new struggle or each new challenge that you put upon yourself?
I think the challenges are going to present regardless. I think the empowerment part of it is that going forth, even though you are scared, that there is a fear and that you are uncomfortable. I think that's when that's my definition of empowerment, is that to be able to move forward despite the obstacles that are coming your way. And even if you realize that you're going to end up failing, for me, the definition of empowerment for myself is to be able to move forth despite knowing that I might fail, that it might actually end up landing me few steps from where I started, few steps behind from where I started, but even then being able to get up. So when I'm looking at empowerment, I'm also looking at the idea of like resilience. I'm also looking at the ideas of grit and what motivates us. And I think as women and as mothers, I think what motivates us, that for me especially, is to be able to create a pathway for our children to be able to follow. So I don't want them to be, you know, reaching the age of 40 and feeling empowered. I think that sort of process I want them to start ahead of time, and especially with girls, and especially with women. As you know, I go and talk about this a lot to young people, about the idea of what it means to be empowered and what empowerment entails. And it's one thing that I really do want to clarify is that empowerment does not equate to entitlement. I'm not saying you're empowered and therefore you're entitled. Empowerment is a process. You have to really work at it, and you have to work for it. And it requires a sense of awareness, a sense of critical thinking, in terms of having the ability to be able to have a choice and then to act upon that choice.
Right.
What helps you in terms of the process of empowerment?
Well, I think it started with really looking at myself and what I wanted in the future. And you brought up your children, and that's a big, big part of it, because, you know, I have two small daughters, mm-hmm. and I don't want to say that it took me all this time to feel empowered because of anyone's wrongdoing, or I wasn't made to feel that I could be that way. But I feel like now that it's taken me this long, and something has clicked in me, that I have these decisions that I can make for myself and for my own happiness and for the happiness of the people who I'm responsible for, who are my daughters. I feel like there's more, I have more of an opportunity and a responsibility to show them what it feels like mm-hmm. to be empowered. I feel like my upbringing was fantastic, and I had the support of my parents in everything that I did. But at the same time, things weren't ever difficult when I grew up. So I didn't really know that you had to struggle and then you can get through that struggle and then feel like, okay, now it's my turn to figure out what I want and how things are going to go from now on. So my kids are seeing that from a different from a different set of eyes that I have right now, because they do see both of their parents going through a single life and trying to come out on the other side as happy, empowered parents. Me more so as a woman, because I have the experience that they're going to have as young women, and things aren't always as easy for girls as they are for boys, and that's just how our society is right now. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm very proud of where I am right now, mentally, successfully, and mm-hmm. with me and my family, it's me and the girls, so that I can teach them. And not so much teach, because I don't think you can teach someone to be empowered.
I think it's more
you encourage it, yeah. and you provide an environment that makes that achievable for them. Mm-hmm. So that's what gives me the biggest sense of empowerment or strength, is knowing that I'm going to focus all this kind of good energy on my kids too, so that they have that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think empowerment can be done upon people. I think it's an intrinsic process. But I think we can lay paths, mm-hmm. and we can also show it by actually doing it ourselves, which mm-hmm. is, I think, the best way to educate and to teach. And because my whole thesis of life is that, yes, there's analysis, but it's also the praxis component of the analysis is equally important. So when I say, you know, you need to walk the walk before you talk the talk, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you mentioned that you speak to younger groups of children, young adults,
youth,
about
yeah.
empowerment. And we touched on the fact that you can't really teach it. So how do you go about encouraging that or presenting that to them in a way that they can take that themselves and feel the empowerment that you're trying to encourage them?
I think for me, the process involves understanding self-awareness is one of the key components, period. And I think mm-hmm. self-awareness, again, is more of an intrinsic thing. It's not something you can teach somebody. It's not like a one-hour workshop you can do on self-awareness and everybody goes home and go, yeah, we have the process of self-awareness and self-actualization and self-realization. However, there is a way that you can get started by understanding your physical self. For me, the power in terms of coming to that realization of empowerment, that I am empowered, came from my own physicality. To be able to move my physical self in and push my physical limits in a way that I never had before, to have that kind of control over my physical aspects, which actually makes you realize about your limits and how you can actually push those limits. And once you come to that kind of realization in terms of your physical abilities, then that actually starts a process of self-awareness and self-realization. It's doing things within your brain that you're not even aware of. So when I'm having this conversation with them, I usually ask them, how do they feel about their physical selves? And then that conversation actually gets started on where they are in terms of their exercise, in terms of their physical self, and in terms of their mental self. Because once you build that up, then that process to self-awareness, you can get started on that particular path.
Okay, I think that's a really good point about starting out with your physical presence and your physical well-being. Because I didn't really think of it that way. But if I'm going back to when my marriage ended, the first few things I did were really physically challenging things. I signed up for a marathon.
I know.
And I'm someone who couldn't run a mile at volleyball tryouts in high school. And a year after I separated from my husband, I'm not going to say I ran a marathon. I completed a marathon and jumped in the Atlantic Ocean in February with the Polar Bear Club. It just was, yeah, a physical, challenging yourself physically to find that strength. And then overcoming those things mm-hmm. leads to a more mental acuity, more strength in your focus. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really think of it as at the time. I didn't think of it as me being empowered. I thought of it as me doing possibly the craziest things that I could think of doing at the time. And running a marathon was certainly the craziest thing I could think of doing at the time. So I think I should come listen to you speak to these younger kids. Maybe I could learn something about empowerment.
Well, I think it's you bring the idea of marathon. And I remember in 2014, I was injured. And I completely lost my ability to move or do anything, and I had to go into functional movement training. And when I lost that ability, it also, I was like, oh, wait, like there are limitations, right? Like, what if you lose your physical abilities? Then what happens? Like, where do you get your sense of empowerment? Mm-hmm. I started thinking about that aspect as well. But what was interesting was that once I started therapy and functional movement training with my then coach, Ben, and I was thinking about new goals because I had to deconstruct everything I had learned up until that point in terms of physical training, because it obviously didn't serve me well because I got seriously injured. I thought, oh, and when he asked me, he goes, what is it that you would like to do? I said, actually, I think I want to climb a mountain. And he's like, okay, that's a goal. And I said, yeah, it's a long-term goal. It's something I want to think about. And I started training for it mm-hmm. almost a year before. I didn't even know where I was going, Christine. There was no mountain in sight, if you think about it. But what happened was that I was going to the Working Time Society's first conference that I attended in Denmark, where I didn't know anybody. I was by myself when I went there, and it was actually incredibly daunting to go in a field full of, you know, these scientists and thinkers who've been thinking about working time for a long time, and there you are, this little person. I don't think of myself as little, but however, what ended up happening was that in the process of going to Denmark, I decided that this was the most appropriate time for me to actually go climb a mountain before I go attend the conference in Denmark. And on my way to Denmark, I made a stop in Iceland and climbed a mountain. And that was one of the most powerful things at that particular point that I did, because it allowed me, once I have that I overcame that physical, that goal that I had built for such a long time, and I did it, it was incredibly powerful, because every time you feel a little squished in a way, you remember that, you know, what you are capable of, because you are going to get squished. You are going to be like, life is as such. Life is full of challenges. Life is full of obstacles. They're going to come your way. But it's a good reminder. Those physical aspects of yourself, for me anyway, are good reminders to say, okay, you know, you are capable of all of these things. Like, so you can set up long-term goals, which is such an important part if you think about grit. Grit is a perseverance and passion for long-term goals. That's where it's a higher order construct. And this is where, you know, you look at resilience, like to be able to be dynamic when those obstacles do come, to be able to adapt, because, you know, life is a very, very dynamic process, and you're going to have variables thrown at you that you're never ready for. So I think that's a good way for me, and for you, I think, is the same way, to be able to approach from our physical selves and then move to those other challenges that are mental that are intellectual.
So you mentioned your injury that kind of sidelined you for a little bit as far as physical goals. What do you think would be a good way to go for someone who just, say, cannot physically empower themselves with physical movement? Because I'm kind of thinking an alternative or the next step maybe past physical is to create, to be creative in a way, in a thinking way or in an artistic way, where you realize maybe I can't physically overcome something challenging, but this is what I can put into the world. I can do this artwork or I can play this instrument or something. Do you think that challenging yourself to learn something in that way is empowering?
Absolutely. I think regardless of, I think we were able to do physical things because I think I've always been drawn to athletics. Physicality has always kind of given me a launching pad, but that's not always going to be there, right? But we are aging. In a way, right? That's because you're the. That's funny. Because the what we were able to do when in my 20s was very different from in my 30s to in my 40s, and sooner or later I'll be going into my 50s, and those goals will change. But I think the idea was to overcome the discomfort. So I think putting yourself in uncomfortable positions and to get, for me, it's more about now. It's not even any, and it's no longer about physical or mental or intellectual. It's more about putting your, getting very comfortable with being uncomfortable. I think that's the end goal in terms of empowerment, is to be able to navigate your way through these sometimes uncomfortable things, and to be able to navigate your way even when you are afraid, when you do, when you are experiencing fear, but you know that this is the right thing to be able to do, that now is the moment to be able to speak up, that now is the moment to be able to write that thing that you wanted to do, to be able to say the thing that you want to say, and to express what you want to express.
So do you think that empowerment, it stems from fear?
I think big part of empowerment again is self-actualization and self-awareness. And when you start having, when you are becoming aware of yourself, you're also becoming aware of your surroundings and your environment. And once you are aware of your surroundings and your environment, you are aware of the systems that are in place that are in place to either empower you or that are actually there to disempower you. And once you are aware of those things, then you can start looking at them as challenges to be solved. And those are challenges. And I think because some of the, as we said, as women, we have a particularly difficult task because society has not provided us with systems of empowerment. I mean, we couldn't even vote up until 1918. And there is such inequities within the system that as mothers, we are very well aware of that. As mothers, we know that our work as mothers is not counted for. It's not part of the, you know, the GDP of a nation. Right. It's one of the most important works that a human being can do, and yep, that's not part of the GDP. And as mothers, we are, as we have discussed this before, you and I, it's a 24/7 job, and that's not taken into account. So I think that process of empowerment is also not just self-actualization, but also realizing the systems that are failing us in many ways. And I think that can only come that from understanding where you are at. And once you have that kind of awareness, then you can also start paying attention to everything else around you. So did you, by the way, Christine, notice a shift within yourself once you felt like, oh yeah, there, you know, I am somewhat empowered here? And what did that look like, actually?
I noticed a very big shift, and I noticed that I stopped being fearful of a lot of things. I stopped worrying about other people's opinions because I very quickly found that people had opinions and sometimes had very strong negative ones towards some of my decisions and some of, you know, the people that I chose to keep around me.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that that can't matter. And once I decided that that couldn't matter, I found myself with more positive influences around me. I found myself more confident in just being in a situation where I don't really know a lot of people, which before would have like made me very, very anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't really matter. I realized that other people's opinion of me doesn't really matter. And it takes a very, very long time to get there. And I would say that I'm quite envious of one of my children in this way, in that she's not, she doesn't follow traditional gender roles. And I would always, I'm worried for myself what people thought of me. And then I look at her and she just doesn't care. Like, mm-hmm. She is who she is and she's confident. And I looked at her for a little bit of influence there because that's what I needed to do. And here I am, this 40-year-old woman, and an 8-year-old has got this kind of down. So, there was a real big shift in my confidence. There was a shift in my happiness and how I related to other people. Very rarely got frustrated with things anymore because I realized that there was going to be failures, and that's fine. So you take your failures and then you're like, okay, well, that doesn't really work. So I'm empowered to fix that, or I'm empowered to do it better the next time, or make sure that I don't go down that road anymore. So that was my shift. And it came out of releasing fear, really, is the biggest thing, is fear of opinions and fear of failure and fear of not being able to accomplish the things that I need to go on. Because now I'm like, I'm just going to do it. It's mm-hmm. going to happen. Might not happen easily, but it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was where my big shift came, mm-hmm. is understanding that it's okay to fail. It's okay to not be positive all the time, because things will turn around, because I have the choice to turn them around, and I'm going to.
Yeah, I think there's like this, we put a lot of pressure on this idea of like being happy all the time, which is like, for me, it's a fallacy. I don't believe in that, because I don't think one can be happy all the time. And I don't think one should be happy all the time. It's just not a perpetual state of being. And to be okay with my discomfort in terms of emotions, and to be able to navigate through those uncomfortable emotions, I think is a very powerful thing. And I think that's something that I have always felt strongly in terms of educating my children about that, mm-hmm. to be okay with, to understand where your emotions are at, and to be able to sift through those emotions is a really big thing. Anger, sadness, pain, these are part, and happiness are part of being human, mm-hmm. and they're all valid emotions. But to be able to navigate through those, to be able to put them in a place which will enhance you as a human being, is, I think, a wonderful ability, and I think a powerful ability. And that's something that also helps in leading to being an empowered human being. And we see that a lot in young people right now. I have to say this generation of young humans are amazing because they are so articulate and they are taking the fights right to the powers to be and more power to them. And I think our job right now, I'm Generation X, I believe. What generation are you, my dear? I don't even know anymore. Are you Gen X? On the other,
I think I'm on the cusp.
Cusp.
What? I saw something recently about what I am because it's like a 5-year window.
Yeah.
I'm in that one.
You're
but
in
I
that
don't remember
window.
What's Generation
so
Y. Maybe.
I think what's important in terms of is to be able to elevate our young people, and I think that is what motivates me, and that's what is powerful to me is that I do want a better world for all our children, mm-hmm. not just my child, mm-hmm. not just my children, but all of our children, because that's the only way we can elevate humanity. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way to move forward. And so I think this is amazing that you and I are having these conversations on empowerment. And I am looking forward to our next conversation. I think our next topic is going to be motherhood.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And thanks
That's
again.
That's a doozy. I got lots to say about that.
Yeah, I think it's a complex. That's a complex topic.
Mm-hmm.
Motherhood and empowerment, especially how the society sees what is good mothering. You know, and working mothers and all of the things that mothers have to put up with, from our biology to our psychology and then our, social relationships and the sacrifices that we have to make. Okay. And thank you, everyone, for joining us on this conversation on Sleep in Society. And we will connect soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @ruhisleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.